Welcome to The Connection, where humans and aliens converse, and where all the dots are connected. I'm Nancy of Zeta Talk, an emissary for aliens from Zeta Reticuli. They are here to warn of great cataclysms on Earth and advise how to survive this. The pending pole shift is not the end. Man will make his next leap forward to live a better time when aliens will live among us. Early in the Zeta Talk saga, the Zetas warned that there would be increasing illness for a number of reasons, one of which was emanations from the core of the earth. The American Indian legend about the white buffalo is an example. And I quote from the Lincoln, Nebraska Journal Star. Looking Horse remembers the birth of Miracle, a white buffalo calf born August 20, 1994, in Janesville, Wisconsin. He was among thousands who made pilgrimages to see the calf. "It was something I thought I would never see in my life," he said. "It was just something I heard about when I was growing up." Three more in North Dakota, Michigan, and South Dakota were born within 4 years of Miracle's birth. Two of those animals, the Michigan calf and Medicine Wheel, have since died. Prior to 1994, there has been only one report of a white buffalo calf birth. In 1933 in Montana. End of the quote. Why would emanations from the core of the earth cause a buffalo calf to become an albino? And I quote from Zeta Talk, White Buffalo, written June 1996. American Indian legends are deeply appealing to most humans, who sense the wisdom of the ages behind the symbolism. The prophecy of the white buffalo seems specific, however, and where such calves have been born going into the millennium have set many to wondering, is this simply coincidence or does it have a meaning? It does indeed have meaning, a prophecy based on what history taught the Plains Indians, and thus the white buffaloes are yet another harbinger of the coming pole shift. Albinos occur naturally in all life forms, some with more rarity than others. What causes an albino to emerge is assumed to be a genetic quirk, where the normal production of color compounds is suppressed. This is the effect, but not the cause, else why would life in dark caverns in the depth of the ocean be pale without color? If color were a genetic quirk, then why the almost total absence of color in creatures living in darkness? Coloration is influenced by radiation, just as tanning takes place upon exposure to sunlight. What is little understood is that this phenomenon has two switches, one increasing coloration under certain radiation frequencies, but another reducing coloration under a different set of radiation frequencies. The core of the earth, emitting in greater bursts the radiation her caverns and deep water creatures are bathed in, is confusing her surface creatures. Thus the white buffalo, heeding the signals from the restless earth, is heralding the approaching pole shift. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. Albinos began popping up everywhere. And I quote from a China News article dated March 9, 1998. Albino wildlife puzzles zoologists. The growing number of albino animals has been observed in nature reserves in central China, puzzling zoologists about the cause. In the dense forest, people have reported seeing bears, snakes, and river deer with white skin and fur. Witnesses said they have even seen white crows. And from Australia, an article from Discovery News dated December 7, 1999, rare white croc appears in Australia. The white estuarine crocodile was the first ever to have been found in Queensland, and perhaps in all of Australia. The two-year-old female crocodile was about 35 inches long. The wildlife experts captured, photographed, measured, and tagged her before releasing the reptile into the river. And from Canada, a broadcast on French TV tonight, January 2000, sort of a National Geographic stuff as you know it, They stated that about 10% of the supposedly black bears in Canada are now being born white for an unknown reason. And Wyoming and Oregon. Last summer in west central Wyoming, Dick Valdez saw something extraordinary. He was accustomed to seeing white-tailed prairie dogs, which range in the area's shortgrass prairies, but he'd never seen a prairie dog like these. About a dozen snow-white, pink-eyed individuals scattered amid the hundreds of ordinary, earth-colored animals. Valdez had worked for years as a biologist for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and he knew this sighting was rare. So he photographed and videotaped the white creatures for 3 weeks. Then, seemingly overnight, the animals vanished. It wasn't too difficult for Valdez to guess why. From a distance, you can't see the brown prairie dogs, but the white ones stood out like sore thumbs. They must have been pretty vulnerable to aerial predators like hawks and eagles. Lack of normal pigmentation has also been seen occasionally en masse in amphibians such as toads and salamanders. Last summer, Oregon biologist Jay Bowerman found thousands of unusually pale individuals in a population of western toad tadpoles. Approximately 1% of the tadpoles appeared to be virtually white. In the Oregon Lake, where Bowerman studied the creatures, the normal colored tadpoles continued to develop and complete metamorphosis, while the white tadpoles did not progress beyond the early egg stage. The scientists captured some of the white tadpoles and observed that they remained healthy, even though they did not transform into adulthood. He surmises that the phenomenon could have resulted from a genetic mutation that disrupted the production of both hormones and pigments needed for metamorphosis. Eventually, the white tadpoles in the lake disappeared, while those Bowerman kept in an aquarium lived on, leading him to suspect that they were far easier for predators to find than the darker tadpoles. End of the quote. These core emanations affect not only the pigmentation as mutations began emerging. Deformed frogs were becoming common, and the Zetas explain. I quote from Zeta Talk, Deformed Frogs, written October 1996. Increasingly, as the core of the Earth adjusts to the approach of her brother, Planet X, this is reflected on the surface of the planet. Humans are aware of radio waves, X-rays, electromagnetic fields, and gravitational tugs. This is but a tiny fraction of the invisible influences, and all of them are affected by the approach of Planet X. Life at the moment of conception and at key points during development of the embryo, where cell specialization or the inception of limbs and organs occurs, is delicate and under more than the influence of DNA. Look to what the drug thalidomide did to the formation of limbs, where a chemical influence interfered with the message intended by the DNA. And children raised under high power lines develop cancer at an undue rate. As with white buffalo calves being born, deformed frogs, which will soon be appearing worldwide, are heralding the approach of Planet X. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. Not just animals, as humans began feeling the effects of the core emanations. I myself noted this during the summer of 2003. During the day, I would feel almost nauseous when the globe was turned such that I was in direct line of Planet X, which was next to the sun. Then, as afternoon wore on, this would ease and I'd be back to my old self. Per the Zetas, this was due to surging subatomic particles due to the influence of Planet X. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Emanation Illness, written November 2005. We've mentioned from the start of Zeta Talk, the early days, that the core emanations will on occasion make people stressed. This is not something that can be seen, as these emanations are invisible to man. What is it that allows animals to sense that an earthquake is approaching? Those electromagnetic emanations from the earth that man ignores or cannot readily sense. But more than this occurs. During the summer of 2003, it was noted by many that an odd fatigue would descend during the day only from the sun. We explained at that time that since Planet X was arriving from that direction, the disturbances in particle flows coming from the sun was at fault. At that time, the Earth likewise had power outages galore for similar reasons. The Earth is now coming into a similar period when the North Pole of Planet X is swinging, slowly, around to point away from the Sun for the 3 days of darkness time those in the Northern Hemisphere of Earth will inevitably experience. This swing is not only slow, it is a bit erratic, so that it will dither and thus cause the Earth to feel the force of this magnetic hose from the North Pole, and then a cessation, coming and going. Power outages will accompany some of this, as well disturbed core emanations, and all of this will make people feel out of sorts. What to do about this and how to handle it? Our advice is to treat these sudden feelings of weakness and depression like a case of sunburn or a slight head cold. If you have sunburn or a head cold, you do not become unduly alarmed and give yourself a break. Less outdoor work, more time on the couch with a hot cup of tea. Do the same when afflicted with these mystery illnesses, as their cause is temporary in the scheme of things. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. The Earth changes caused by the presence of Planet X involve more than just core emanations. Climate change is involved. The Earth wobble involves a weather wobble, wild swings in temperature and between drought and deluge. All of this gets creatures on the move, seeking their niche, and these creatures include germs and their hosts. And I quote from Zeta Talk, "Take Sick," written February 1998. Increasingly, as the pole shift nears, the populace will take sick. This will take the form of known illnesses occurring more frequently, seemingly depressed immune systems, but will also appear as new and puzzling illnesses not seen before the memory of man. What's going on here? Birds flying that use magnetism are confused, arriving in the wrong place, and all of this affects the immune system as almost everything does. The changes at the core of the Earth that have resulted in El Nino weather patterns and white buffalo and deformed frogs also affect man. Not only is the body asked to adapt to a changing environment where radiation elements unknown to man are increasing, various infectious agents are also influenced to behave differently. Exposure patterns are thus changed, with infections occurring in circumstances otherwise considered healthy. The germs are on the move, their carriers are on the move, and thus humans are exposed to diseases that are so rare as to be undocumented in medical journals. Often there is almost a decision by humans and animals alike to simply not persevere. They sense there's going to be very troubled times ahead. Perhaps they would have a struggle and not make it, and they just let themselves go. They allow themselves to become sick. This happens in the best of times, and many situations where the doctor faces an illness that should not be devastating to the patient, yet they are dying. And other situations where the will to live pulls the patient out of the worst case, and they surprise and shock the doctors. So the determination to live or die has a great effect. As the time of the pole shift approaches, this type of distress will increase steadily, affecting the weak and despondent primarily, as do all illnesses. When the immune system is depressed, as occurs in those with poor nutrition or those whose body is in a weakened state due to a series of illnesses, but also in those who have become despondent, illness can occur aggressively with sweeping spread. You will see increased illness, odd illness, microbes that travel because an insect is scattered about or spreading germs in places where it normally doesn't travel. This does not mean that the illness has been spread deliberately. Some have, but well over 90% of all the illness and distress you're going to see is a natural situation, a natural occurrence. Because of the changing, swirling in the core of the Earth, and this will continue to uptick until the pole shift, starvation from crop shortages and exposure due to the erratic weather will compound this trend, with the die-off expected after the pole shift occurring early in some parts of the world. Of course, the devastation after the pole shift will be very severe. A majority of deaths that will occur as a result of the pole shift will not be due to the initial impact, but will be due to illness, the spreading of germs, and a lethargic depression that envelops mankind. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. Reports of epidemics caused by common germs began arising. Stomach flu on cruise ships, and staff infections at military bases. Since these are old familiar germs, depressed immune systems seem to be the culprit. And I quote from a Scientific America article dated August 2000, "Is global warming harmful to health?" Disasters promote by various means the emergence, resurgence, and spread of infectious disease. That prospect is deeply troubling because infectious illness is a genie that can be very hard to put back into its bottle. It may kill fewer people in one fell swoop than a raging flood or an extended drought, but once it takes root in a community, it often defies eradication and can invade other areas. The control issues loom largest in the developing world, where resources for prevention and treatment can be scarce. But the technologically advanced nations, too, can fall victim to surprise attacks, as happened last year when the West Nile virus broke out for the first time in North America, killing 7 New Yorkers. In these days of international commerce and travel, an infectious disorder that appears in one part of the world can quickly become a problem continents away if the disease-causing agent or pathogen finds itself in a hospitable environment. Floods and droughts associated with global climate change could undermine health in other ways as well. They could damage crops and make them vulnerable to infection and infestation by pests and choking weeds, thereby reducing food supplies and potentially contributing to malnutrition. And they could permanently or semi-permanently displace entire populations in developing countries, leading to overcrowding and the disease connected with it, such as tuberculosis. And from another article, Reuters, dated February 2, 2000, diseases from around the world threatening the U.S. At least 30 previously unknown diseases have appeared globally since 1973, including HIV, AIDS, hepatitis C, Ebola, hemorrhagic fever, and the encephalitis-related Nipah virus that emerged in Indonesia last year. 20 well-known infectious diseases such as tuberculosis, malaria, and cholera have reemerged or spread since 1973, some reappearing in deadlier drug-resistant forms. End of the quote. Example of opportunistic germs taking advantage of depressed immune systems is Morgellons, showing up in the U.S. seemingly intractable to treatment. Morgellons manifests as tiny fibers emerging from the skin, red blotches, a feeling that bugs are crawling on and in the skin, and mental confusion and stupor. This had shown up 300 years earlier in Europe, identical fiber descriptions and symptoms. A nematode, a tiny bug, was discovered in some of the fibers and also in cotton fibers, so clothing was suspected of being a source of infection. Some of the fibers even pulse, showing life under the microscope. Yuck! And I quote from Zeta Talk, Morgellons, written May 2006. We have stated early on in Zeta Talk that there would be an increase in illness as the time of the pole shift approached, and certainly through the pole shift and after, for many reasons. The earth changes in climate, the core swirls. This is what causes the white buffalo and albinism and wildlife and other creatures to increase. And certainly, if the changes are creating more albinos, what is it doing to other parts of your body? This is stressful to creatures living on the surface. Like all stress, the immune system and will to live differs. We have stated that there would be a drop in the immune system of many because of the changes from the many particle flows flowing in and out of the earth and swirling around that man was not designed to withstand on an evolutionary basis. The second reason is the type of bugs, the climate change, the temperature swings. Tropical bugs that migrate up, or, in the case of the southern hemisphere, down, to land where there is no resistance to them. Disease breaks out. It's a known disease. It's not a new disease. But everybody is concerned about the outbreak, wondering if it was planted. But these bugs just travel and are opportunistic. A third factor is germs or creatures that man is not even aware of that will increase to the point that it will become a noticeable illness. This is again due to a dropped immune system where it appears to be a new illness, but it has in fact been around, just not that noticeable or common. Morgellons disease is an example in that category, known in the past. It's been in the news that 300 years ago in Europe there was a very similar outbreak, and the similarity is astonishing. Indeed, it's a series of creatures that coexist together and support each other. It's also reported that Lyme disease is commonly in place in people that develop Morgellons. The common carrier is the tick, and it seems to spread in areas like California, Texas, Florida, where there's a warm climate, although it is throughout the United States. But ticks bite and infect birds or many creatures, wildlife that travels, even humans that move, and therefore the coexistence or cooperative nature of various bacteria, little creatures, nematode-like creatures, is spread. It's just another example of what we've been describing, increased illness. What to do about this? Clearly, improving the immune system is a big factor, because not everyone comes down with it. Not everyone gets Lyme disease. Lyme disease is an infection that permeates the body, the joints, and floats around in the lymph system. The body can even cure cancer, yet other people will get cancer and let it overtake them. This is based on the will to live, so this is the main factor. Improve the lifestyle. Improve the surroundings. Give them a more positive outlook. The second factor, as has been recorded, a lot of vitamin C can make a difference. Well, that's true of any infection. Those are two approaches we would recommend. Good nutrition, a positive outlook, helping to give psychological impetus to boost the immune system, which is the main problem here. Cotton is an organic substance, and these are organic parasites. And yes, they would be attracted to cotton more than synthetic substances. But cotton washed with bleach or a strong detergent will not be so affected. What is that manufacturing process? They like a strong dye, a very red shirt, for instance. So they're hardly likely to bleach the cotton and then dye it red. They're likely to do as little as possible with the fibers to decrease the cost of production. Yes, biological material, and that would include wool, would possibly spread these nematodes. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. Attitude is important, the will to live, a positive outlook. So often doctors state that one patient is sure to die, but he survives. Another is sure to live, but he slips away. The will to live, to be cured and healthy, has an immense impact. I have a personal case in point, my own situation at the age of 23 years when I had French polio, was quadriplegic with this, on a ventilator, had a paralyzed digestive tract so could take nothing by mouth. The paralysis was marching up my spine and had reached the heart nerve, which today is partly paralyzed, giving me a weak heart. Five specialists determined I'd not survive. The neurologist, the doctor of internal medicine, the anesthesiologist, the physical therapist, and since I was pregnant at the time, 6 months pregnant, the gynecologist. It was a consensus. I was not going to make it. They had an incubator in the room with me all the time, in the corner, for the moment when I'd die and the baby would have to be cut from my womb to save it. Fooled them all, I did, and even got back on my feet and into high heels again. Such is the will to live. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Human Health, written December 2002. The shift will find germs, as well as animals and humans and plants, migrating after the shift, and this situation has started in the years leading up to the shift. Thus, even if one remains in the homeland, new germs will arrive, uninvited. The roiling core, which is increasing in activity in the years leading up to the shift, has little effect on animal and human life, despite the increase in albinism like the white buffalo. The core, after all, roils all the time under normal circumstances, so it's nothing new. Those surviving the shift will find themselves experiencing more illness due to new germs being brought into the area, a reduced immune system due to depression, and poor nutrition. In any case, the answer is to have a positive outlook, as this raises the immune system. Eat a diet balanced in vitamins and minerals, even if a high-calorie diet is not possible. Exercise by taking action to improve the life of all the community, as taking action against problems and doing for others raises the morale overall. And allowing the body to adjust to new germs by developing antibodies, a process that often requires the body to be sick for a period of time, but the fever and weakness are a normal part of the process. In time, this passes, so should be looked upon as temporary. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. Another factor affecting human health in recent years, since Planet X arrived in 2003, in fact, is sunscald. People reported the sun appeared white, not yellow, could not be gazed at during the sunrise and sunset as in the past, and gave them sunburn in less time than in the past. Crops even matured early. Some reports from 2003, June 25, 2003. Why are the sun's rays burning and tanning worse these days? I was outside for just a few hours the last 2 days, and it wasn't that hot, and I got quite a tan. Not really burned red like in years past, but how can you get tanned so fast? I remember 20 years ago it took a good 6 weeks to get a tan. I was moving and not laying in the sun, too. And another, June 30th, 2003. I've noticed that the sun is huge. Does the sun grow in size? I have pictures, taken on different days, same approximate time. Big difference in size. The sky seems whitewashed. I've worked outside in Florida for 18 years, and I'm telling you that something is up with the sun. And from another, I'm in Northern Virginia. The sky has that bright white, hard, hazy glare that makes your eyes water to look at it. And from July 1st, 2003. I'm a farmer in Illinois. Many of my friends have been commenting about how unusually bright the sun has been this summer. Despite a relatively cool growing season so far, our crops are well advanced for this time of year. This photo of last evening's sunset is unusual because it's never this bright at sunset. And July 3rd, 2003. The cherry crop matured about 2 weeks early here in northern Utah, and then suddenly, after a big rain last week, they began to burst. Farmers have never seen anything like this. Something's definitely happening. And July 14th, 2003. While at breakfast this morning with friends from work, two guys mentioned that the sun seemed extremely bright lately and was making it very difficult to drive during the morning and evening commute. They've been making the same drive for years and can't remember a time when they had so much trouble seeing the road. End of the quotes. During that summer, some crops in my garden looked scalded too, burned. What was causing this? The Zetas explained. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Sunscald, written December 2005. An ultra-glaring sun was noted in 2003 when Planet X roared into the inner solar system from the direction of Orion and screeched to a halt as it neared the sun and the repulsion force clicked in. The tail of Planet X, not affected by the repulsion force, maintained its momentum and wafted past the sun to deliver red dust and odd atmospheric changes to the Earth. What causes the sunscald? The intense brightness that does not translate into increased heat and cannot be correlated to solar activity or sunspots. A fog bank with a light shown on it appears to be evenly lit because the light is scattered and bouncing back to the observer. Is there more light or simply scattered light? A rainbow gives off distinct light in various stepped spectrum because it is bent toward the observer by water in the clouds. But normally white light prevails, as all light in the spectrum is available. If the sun is no longer yellow, it is because all light rays are scattered and the steady state of yellow is interfered with. During a rainbow, no additional heat is generated, nor is a heat difference noted when the light returns to being scattered. The perception of increased intensity is due to the mix in the light spectrum. Those spectrums the eye can best adapt to no longer present. You formerly looked at the setting sun without distress, the yellow or orange sun, though the sun was still in view and its rays were coming into your eye with full force. It's the loss of your yellow sun that is affecting your eye's ability to look at the sun, thus the perception of increased brightness, as the sun's rays, scattered, are presenting the same mix to your eye that high noon presents. Likewise, with the rays that create sunburn, which normally are not bent toward the observer at sunset or other than high noon, but now are scattered to arrive at one's skin. The time of day is no longer a protection from sunburn. This will only get worse as the tail continues to turn toward the earth. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. Where sun scald can make crops grow faster, the weather changes caused by the presence of Planet X have the opposite effect, crop failure. Crop failure due to weather did not start appearing until the year 2000. By August of that year, 86 different countries reported crop damage due to weather. I quote from the Trouble Times topic on shortages. By 2000, shortages were in evidence worldwide in Afghanistan, Albania, Algeria, Argentina, Armenia, Austria, Australia, Bolivia, Brazil, Bulgaria, Burundi, Cambodia, Canada, China, Croatia, Cuba, Cyprus, Ethiopia, France, Georgia, Ghana, Greece, Guyana, Honduras, India, Iran, Iraq, Israel, Italy, Jamaica, Jordan, Kazakhstan, Kenya, Korea, Laos, Liberia, Madagascar, Mexico, Moldavia, Mongolia, Morocco, Mozambique, Nepal, Pakistan, Palestine, Paraguay, Peru, Philippines, Poland, Romania, Russia, Saudi Arabia, Serbia, Slovakia, South Africa, Sudan, Syria, Tajikistan, Tanzania, Thailand, Uganda, Ukraine, United Kingdom, Uruguay, Uzbekistan, Vietnam, and Yugoslavia. By 2000, it was clear that floods were devastating crops in Asia, while a world drought was devastating crops in Africa, Europe, and the Balkans, while shortages in wheat loomed. By 2000, the Corn Belt, Hawaii, Texas, North Dakota, the Midwest, New England, the Southeast, and the apple harvest suffered weather-related shortages, with agriculture disasters declared. End of the quotes. This was predicted by the Zetas in 1995. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Crop Failures, written July 1995. As we have described earlier, going into the cataclysms, the weather will become unpredictable, with torrential rainstorms where not expected, and droughts likewise were not expected. Extremes of temperature will be experienced, unusually warm winters where the trees and shrubs will start to bud, thinking spring, and then be subject to frost. Similarly, frosts will come late in the spring, almost into summer, killing the buds which have already put forth their tender shoots. Where today the world balances these situations, shipping produce around the world, during the years coming close to the time of the reappearance of Planet X, all parts of the world will experience extremes. Of course, leading up to the cataclysms, not all produce will fail. Greenhouse crops will come through. Backyard gardens, tended carefully by watchful eyes, will survive. But the large cash crops that supply crowded population centers will find little to market, and the prices will go up accordingly. Except for those few who have prepared, humans surviving the cataclysms will find themselves without food. In the cities, this will happen quickly, as fresh or frozen food will spoil due to total power failures, and canned and dried goods will only go so far. What then? Rural areas, where one would presume to find gardens put in and livestock in abundance, will not be much better off. The droughts and irregular weather will have taken their toll, to say nothing of the cataclysms themselves. How long will a hungry farmer hand grain to his livestock? He will eat the grain himself and the livestock, and when he gets hungry enough, will eat his last breeding pair and his seed stock. Gone. Should the reader think that planting and harvesting will go on as before, they should realize that the gloom that follows a cataclysm is devastating to vegetation. If vegetation survives the droughts that precede the cataclysms and the hail and firestorms and high winds that occur during the cataclysms, then it must next survive an almost continual deluge and lack of sunlight. The comeback after a cataclysm is not, in the main, from domesticated plants and animals, although some dedicated farmers will bring their breeding pairs and seed stock through. The comeback is from wilderness areas, from sturdy roots that keep on trying and scattered seed that keeps on sprouting. In the meantime, humans starve. End of the quote from Zeta. The solution here, per the Zetas, is to adjust to a varied diet. Bugs will flourish in the gloom and drizzle of the aftertime, and bugs are high in fat and protein. Fish from the ocean, which will rebound, also is a solution. Self-reliance in home gardens and knowing how to save seed is another answer. Stress, the unrelenting tension and anxiety many live under, contributes to illness. This will only increase as the day of the pole shift approaches. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Stress Diseases, written July 1995. Worry is the greatest drain, as the body is fighting the issues endlessly, with no end. Your body is not designed for this. It was designed for fight or flight, not endless battle. In your primitive past, when presented with challenges, you either fought off the threat or were eaten or destroyed. The matter was quickly over. Modern society presents situations that are neither over quickly nor destroy quickly. Thus the battle stage is drawn out endlessly, and the soldier grows weary. Put the battle into an end somehow, if only by deciding not to engage. If there's nothing you can do at the moment, and you have had no effect on the outcome, then put your weapons down and be at peace. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. Physical stress is also caused by walking erect, which surprisingly has a simple solution. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Walking Erect, written February 1996. The human animal is painfully aware that it used to walk on all fours, and that the transition to walking erect is anything but complete. Back pain, ruptured discs, worn-out hip and knee joints, and bulging bellies are but a few of the constant reminders. The spine, in particular, reflects the distress the body deals with in walking erect, and thus the popularity of specialists who can manipulate the spine when it skews sideways due to pressure and compression it was not designed to take. Where manipulating the spine can seem to give instant relief, such crunching and shifting of the delicate tissue around bone and nerve are not good in the long term. Much better to acknowledge your origins and align your own spine naturally. Get down on your hands and knees more often, with whatever excuse. Scrub the floor, sort papers, weed the garden in this position, and you'll be surprised at how well your spine aligns itself. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. Psychosis is very dependent upon circumstances, emerging during times of stress and being relieved in a stress-free environment. The Zetas have predicted that 43% of the pole shift survivors will be afflicted to some degree by insanity. Such will be the scope of disruption in their lives, distress and grief over what is lost, and the desire for escape. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Psychosis, written September 1995. As with fainting, psychosis and senility allow the human animal to disconnect with reality. Catatonic or autistic individuals are, chemically, in a place where they are not feeling anxiety. The world does not exist for them. Delusions serve the same purpose, as the individual can build a world about them that meets their needs. How much different are delusions from the games people play with themselves to make themselves more secure, more attractive, or more valued in their own eyes than they are in the eyes of others. Depression serves a purpose in causing the individual to retract and withdraw from a world that is causing injury. Time to reflect and plot a new course. Senility, outside of the genetic disease that is Alzheimer's, is greatest in those who have the least to live for. Activity and involvement actually prevents senility. Senility blunts the awareness of the aged, so they can reminisce about happier days when they were younger. Infants born psychotic are thus because the genetic throw of the dice gave them an ultra-sensitive nature, and they are doomed to live in the sheltered world they live in. Depressives recover when they change the life situation that is distressing them, sometimes with dramatic swiftness. That so many depressives do not recover but mask their unhappiness with antidepressants does not point to the illness as being intractable, so much as it points to the rigidity of society. Schizophrenics react to the same stress as other humans, but with a stronger and quicker reaction. This is widely recognized in giving schizophrenics a more sheltered environment, but as the press is for society to reabsorb the individual, any respite from the chemical surges is short-lived. Antipsychotic drugs simply mask the raging surges, as though the fire hose were perpetually turned on the blaze so that one can say that the fire is out. The problem is here not so much that the psychosis issues due to life stresses, as that society has rigid expectations for all its citizens. Does psychosis occur in the animal kingdom, outside of the human animal? Most certainly, a fact that veterinarians will be the first to attest to. Psychotic pets, however, are usually given the life changes that are indicated and recover. Human society is not so kind to the human animal, who is generally drugged and told to struggle on in place. Anorexia is a problem on the increase as the tension level rises. This is directly related to stress within the family setting and has at its base a mother-child conflict. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Anorexia, written November 2005. Mother represents food, and whether feeding the child from the breast or from the bottle will either make these early sessions a delight of touch and caring, or a battle over the outcome. A control-oriented mother will not allow the child to choose the time and outcome of nursing sessions, but will start dictating these issues. Normally, nursing occurs when the babe is restless and hungry, the mother's milk responding, and the outcome, a sated babe falling back into sleep, a happy outcome all around. The child dictates the time and amount to be consumed. A control-oriented mother will try to decide when a nursing session or a bottle feeding session should occur. Her schedule, her determination on the amount to be consumed, and the battle over food started early. The babe tries to turn away, has the nipple forced into its mouth again and again. The sense of anger in the air and the framework of the battle has been laid. Close examination of the dynamics around the dinner table when the babe is a child invariably shows argument about what food to eat, how much to consume, with the mother dishing it out onto the child's plate and watching closely that it get consumed. This should be compared to the family where the child chooses what to load onto its plate from serving dishes with only an occasional suggestion from mother to try the broccoli or whatever, with father commenting that if one fills the plate, it is wasteful unless eaten, a clean plate. Basically, the child chooses. Having had the issue of control over one's life hopelessly confused with food consumption, the anorexic finds food fighting clicking in even when not the issue. If someone suggests they vote for a candidate, the anorexic would not themselves choose. They stop eating. If the work hours are changed and the new routine not what the anorexic would prefer, they stop eating. If the spouse wants sex or does not want sex, averse what the anorexic wants for the evening, they stop eating. In a world where tensions are on the increase and those wanting control over the environment becoming more adamant and shrill, these matters will only exacerbate. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. Thank you. Autoimmune disease are another result of stressful living situations, a heightened immune system reacting to stress, though this is little understood or even recognized. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Autoimmune Diseases, written October 1995. The immune system is sensitive to the psychological state, a fact which human physicians are acutely aware of. Cancer patients are often choosing to die by maintaining the depressive state that precedes the disease, a quick, if somewhat gruesome, escape, and one which the patient can use to punish those they are angry at, the family, who must watch the process. In autoimmune disease, as in allergies, the problem is the reverse, an overactive or rather hypersensitive immune response. The body is like a bow strung too tight, which twangs at every touch. This is not the result of depression, a wish to die, but a heightened wish to survive, to live. The body perceives danger due to the psychological situation and mobilizes. Autoimmune diseases frequently remit an assault in waves those outside the situation struggle to interpret. At times the disease disappears entirely, just goes away. If the patients are analyzed from a psychological perspective, looking past the loving smiles and tender pats, one will see whereof we speak. The patient is often in the iron grip of someone who has restricted their life into nothingness, a dull and boring void without purpose or true emotion. Free the afflicted into the normal interaction that life presents without repercussion for their participation, and watch what happens. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. Where most people wish for good health and a long life, facing the prospect of a pole shift, some move in the other direction, having a death wish. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Death Wish, written November 1995. Florida and California are both at risk to heavy tidal waves during the coming pole shift, and as suffocation is a painless and swift departure, many oldsters or transients wishing not to linger during troubled times have migrated there. These decisions are not conscious, however, and if challenged, would be denied. Suicide for those in good health who have concern for others should never be considered, although this is, of course, a personal decision. The reason we advise to consider otherwise is that others will need you. You're aware of what is coming, and so many will be taken unawares. There are children who will be left orphaned, without protection, vulnerable to the worst nightmares. There are those who will wish to stay alive for the safety of their dependents, children or others in poor health and needing them, who will need advice, what to eat, where to go, how to distill the water to avoid lead poisoning, where to get vitamin C, and what to expect over the next few months. Should they move to the hills or remain along the rivers where fish abound? Should they rebuild a shelter or plan a houseboat to accommodate the rising water? Should they join this group or that, or take to the road? What country or direction is the best direction, if moving is the obvious choice? How long will this last? Will help arrive to rescue them? All these questions are those that you can help them with, so before considering an easy way out for yourself, consider how much you can relieve the pain of others who will suffer without your help. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. The Zetas have stated that cancer is a disease which often has, at its base, a desire to escape, to die. It's certainly true that cancer cells are forming all the time, even in the young and healthy, but are gobbled up by the immune system, and spontaneous remission occurs despite advanced stages. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Curing Cancer, written July 1996. Cancer is considered a scourge of mankind, as cancer is so often what the mortician writes as the cause of death. What is poorly understood is that cancer is a natural process which allows the organism an out, a type of suicide. How often is it observed by humans that a fellow, informed that they have incipient cancer, continues the activity that is deemed to be causing or encouraging the cancer? Smoking is a case in point. Cancer is developing all the time, but is held at bay by scavenger cells that mop them up, as is known by your biologists. What occurs in cancer development is that the scavengers are told to cease, to back off and let the destruction proceed. Cancer occurs for the same reason many infectious diseases run rampant, because the immune system turns off. As has long been recognized by humans, the immune system is highly sensitive to one's surroundings and by design. Suicide in nature is rarely possible other than to cease eating or fail to remove oneself from danger, both actions which are associated with mental depression. The frantic war against cancer waged by the medical profession is most often a losing battle because the patient has determined the outcome. Spontaneous remission occurs without medical assistance, and many cancer patients can be found to have several of these in their history. When a spontaneous remission occurs during medical treatment, the treatment is credited, but in truth, the success is due to the care and attention the patient receives. At last, they get time off from the hated job, have someone ask with sincerity how they feel that day, or escape from a domineering spouse with a hospital stay. Cancer treatments are always futile when the underlying causative situation is not addressed, as even if all the cancer cells are eradicated, which is never the case, they would just recur in some other spot. To cure cancer, address the patient's life first and attack the tumor as a secondary measure. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. But there is some good news coming out of the pole shift. Your health will improve. For many plump couch potatoes, they'll become slim and healthy for the first time in their lives. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Physical Fitness, written July 1995. Nature designed man to meet the struggle for existence, to be able to walk through his days in search of food and water, to climb trees and cliffs for a snatch of food. The last thing nature foresaw was a life of sloth, but that is what an increasing number of mankind lives. Just as civilization brought the demons of sloth onto mankind, the demons of plenty have left their mark. Rich food, the type eaten only on occasion by early man, is on the platter every day, and the richer the better. Pass the butter, please. High-fiber foods, normally the staple in early man, may be absent altogether. Early man ate frequently, shat frequently due to his high-fiber diet, and drank all he could hold when encountering clean water. Protein feasts were rare, and on those occasions early man ate nothing but the protein until this was gone or he was chased from the find or kill. The healthiest diet is one that takes mankind's beginnings into consideration. Probably the most important physical fitness advice we can give to the human animal caught in the rigors of civilization's incessant demands is not to worry. If a matter is not in your control, put it from your mind. What will be, and your stress diseases will not change this one way or the other. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. And for those who survive the shift, a very exciting time awaits them. And I quote from Zeta Talk, under the Asian flu epidemic, written January 2004. Humans intent on surviving the coming times should be careful to eat a proper diet. But the most important ingredient in a strong immune system is attitude. Think less of the coming times as a depressing disaster and look beyond them to the future, which will ultimately be immensely better for survivors than the present times. Life on Earth will change with survivors supporting each other and the Earth becoming a home to high-tech visitors. Fascinating, unfolding, and emotionally satisfying. End of the quote.
I'm Roger, president of Troubled Times Incorporated. We're a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping mankind survive during troubled times when self-sufficiency may be the only answer. Our organization offers a twin set CD of survival information at cost to the public. The CDs are in hypertext and PDF format, two popular browser formats, and contain all the information collected by the massive Troubled Times website. The CDs allow you to browse this information offline at your leisure. The cost of the twinned pair is $4.10, and this includes postage. You can also get the survival booklet, a hip-sized booklet of the gist of the Troubled Times advice, for just $5, including postage. We offer a popular combo package for $7.50 that includes both the CDs and the booklet, with the lower postage expense reflected in that price. Send for your copies today to start making practical plans for your and your family's survival. Just click on the $4.10 CD link at www.zetatalk.com and your copy will be on its way.
That concludes our broadcast. Thank you for being with us. Remember to carry love in your heart. It's the commodity of the future. As the Zetas say, love may have a blooming going into the shift, as it ought, those with great love in their hearts responding to the realization that little else matters.